Chapter 8. Jack Reacher was no kind of a legal scholar, but like all working cops, he had learned something about the law. Mostly its practical, real-world applications, and its tricks and its dodges. And he had learned the areas where the law was silent. As in, there was no law that said people who pick up hitchhikers have to tell the truth. In fact, Reacher had learned that harmless fantasy seemed to be irresistible. He figured it was a large part of the reason why drivers stopped at all. He had ridden with obvious cubicle drones who claimed to be managers, and managers who claimed to be entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs who claimed to be successful, and employees who said they owned the company, and nurses who said they were doctors, and doctors who said they were surgeons. People like to spread their wings a little. They like to inhabit a different life for an hour or two, testing it, tasting it, trying out their lines, basking in the glow. No harm, no foul. All part of the fun. But Alan King's lies were different. There was no element of self-aggrandizement in what he was saying. The guy wasn't making himself bigger or better or smarter or sexier. He was telling stupid, trivial, technical lies for no clear reason at all. As in, the blue denim shirts. They were not a corporate brand. They were not crisp, attractive items with embroidered logos above the pockets. They had never been worn before or laundered. They were cheap junk from a dollar store, straight from the shelf, straight from the plastic packet. Reacher knew, because they were the kind of shirt he wore himself. As in, King claimed they hadn't stopped in 3 hours, but the gas gauge was showing 3/4 full, which implied the Chevy could run 12 hours on a single tank. Which was close to 1,000 miles at highway speeds, which was impossible. And the water King had given him with Karen Delfuenzo's aspirin was still cold from a refrigerator, which would be impossible after 3 hours in a car with the heater blasting. Lies. As in, King claimed somewhere in Nebraska is his residence, but then said there were 1.5 million people living where he lived. Which was impossible. 1.5 million was close to Nebraska's entire population. Omaha had about 400,000 people, and Lincoln had 250. There were only 9 U.S. cities with populations of more than 1 million, and 8 of them were either emphatically bigger or smaller than 1.5 million. Only Philadelphia was close to that number. So were these guys really from Philly? Or did King mean a metro area? In which case Philadelphia was too big, but all kinds of other places would slide up the scale and become possibilities. Columbus would fit the bill, maybe, or Las Vegas, or Milwaukee, or San Antonio, or the Norfolk, Virginia Beach, Newport News sprawl. But not any place in Nebraska. Not even close. And why wasn't Karen Delfuenzo talking? She had said, "I've got one," about the aspirin. And she had said her name during the mutual introductions. And then she had said nothing more. Reacher himself was quite capable of silence for hours at a time. But even he had been making an effort in terms of polite conversation. Delfuenzo looked like the kind of woman who would join in with such social proprieties. But she hadn't. Why not? Not my problem, Reacher thought. His problem was to get himself on a bus to Virginia, and he was closing in on that target at close to 80 miles an hour, more than 100 feet a second. He leaned back in his seat and closed his eyes. Julia Sorensen hopped around outside the bunker and peeled her plastic booties off, and then she sealed them in a bag with her gloves. Evidence, possibly, and certainly a biohazard. Then she found her phone and called out full boat teams of FBI medical examiners and crime scene investigators. Her case. She got in the back of the deputy's car with the eyewitness. No reason to haul the poor guy out into the cold. Goodman got in the front, and the deputy twisted around behind the wheel. It was a regular little conference, 2 and 2, separated by the bulletproof shield. The eyewitness was a man of about 50. Whiskery, not well-groomed, dressed in winter farm clothes. He ran through his story with the kind of imprecision Sorensen expected. She was well aware of the limitations of eyewitness testimony. As a Quantico trainee, she had been sent to interview a doctor suspected of Medicare fraud. She had waited for her appointment in his crowded waiting room. A guy had burst in to rob the place for drugs, firing a handgun, rushing here, rushing there, rushing out. Afterwards, of course, she found out the whole thing was staged. The doctor was an actor, the robber was an actor, the handgun rounds were blanks, and everyone in the waiting room was a law enforcement trainee. There was no consensus on what the robber looked like. Absolutely none at all. Short, tall, fat, thin, black, white, no one really remembered. Since that morning, Sorensen had taken eyewitness testimony with a pinch of salt. She asked,
"Did you see the man in the green coat arrive?"
The guy said,
"No, I saw him on the sidewalk, that's all. Heading for the old pumping station right there."
"Did you see the red car arrive?"
"No, it was already there when I looked."
"Were the two men in the black suits in it?"
"No, they were on the sidewalk, too."
"Following the other man?"
The guy nodded. "About 10 feet back, maybe 20.
"Can you describe them?"
"They're just two guys in suits."
"Old? Young?"
"Neither. They were just guys."
"Short? Tall?"
"Average."
"Black or white?"
"White."
"Fat or thin?"
"Average."
Sorensen asked, "Any distinguishing marks?"
The guy said,
"I don't know what that is."
"Anything special about their faces? Beards, scars, piercings, tattoos, like that?"
"They're just guys."
"What about the color of their hair? Was it light or dark?"
"Their hair?" The guy said, "I don't know. It was hair-colored, I guess."
Sorensen asked,
"Did you see a knife when they went in?"
"No," the guy said.
"Did you see a knife when they came out?"
"No."
"Did they have blood on them?"
"I guess one of their suit jackets looked wet in a couple of spots. But it was black, not red, like it could have been water, on a black suit, I mean."
Sorensen said,
"The streetlights are yellow."
The guy glanced out his window as if to confirm it and said,
"Yes."
"So blood might have looked black in the yellow light."
"I guess."
Sorensen asked,
"Did the red car belong to the two men?"
The guy said, "They got in it, lady."
"But how did they look when they got in it? Like they were totally familiar with it? Or did they fumble around?"
Goodman looked a question from the front seat. Sorensen said,
"The dead guy had nothing in his pockets, including no car keys. So how did he get here? Maybe the red car was his."
Goodman said, "Then how did the two men get here? They didn't walk, it's cold, and they weren't wearing coats."
"Maybe they all came together."
The eyewitness said,
"I don't know, lady. They got in the car and drove away. That's all I saw."
So Goodman let the eyewitness make his way home to bed, and then he drove Sorensen north to let her take a look at the abandoned red car.